Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Welcome into Inside Carolina's live post-game podcast, a little bit later than normal. These 7 o'clock games are great for folks on the East Coast. You can get home, eat supper, watch a game, get done, and still get to bed early. But if you're in the Midwest, like Mr. Dewey Burke is my guest, it is a difficult time to have a game at 5 o'clock and then 7 o'clock, which is bedtime. But Dewey, I appreciate you making time today. Fun game to talk about. We're going to get into it.
It was a fun game. Really enjoyed watching the game, even if you were a casual fan and didn't care about it as much as you and I do and everyone listening. I think it probably was a great college basketball game to watch. It was physical. It was athletic. There was good shot making, and the crowd seemed to be great. So we'll get into it, but just an enjoyable college basketball game. I was glad to see our toughness that we certainly showed in the first half, and I thought we played really solid in the second half. You know, I know they cut it to 2, but I felt confident that we were going to continue to get good shots and score. And I think they're pretty good. So it was an enjoyable game.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I've always had some sort of not affinity for Michigan, but there's always been something about Michigan. Maybe it's the colors, maybe it's the Jumpman stuff. So it's always cool. It's always cool to see. Yeah, I can't lie. Some of that Jordan brand Michigan color stuff is nice, but I don't want to get in trouble with the chat, so we'll move on. But, you know, and then I saw the score was 77-71, and, of course, reminded me of senior year at Carolina and a relevant score there. But let's get into it a little bit, and then we'll answer some questions. There's a bunch on the message boards already out there. This is a game where North Carolina, I felt, you know, they look good at times against Ohio State, but we've talked about how their inconsistencies, and there was some inconsistency tonight. But from a physical aspect of it, Dewey, I thought this is one of the better games that North Carolina's played definitely all year, and they look very similar to the team that wasn't going to take any BS at the end of the year last year. And I thought that Hunter Dickinson tried to get in Baycott's mind when Baycott's taking care of him, you know, on the stat sheet. But I thought that was a real turning point. And to see Hubert Davis get fired up, just what are you thinking as a former guy that's been in that fight, been in that arena when you're watching that? Because it gets my old blood pumping seeing it happen.
Yeah. Loved it. And obviously we saw that a lot from Coach Williams, right? I mean, whether that was demonstrably towards us in the huddle or on the bench, or obviously he was famous for his kind of, come on, get a stop, get down in a stance. But he was very fiery, and he would have certainly shown himself to be more reserved, but not tonight. Yeah, he was very into it. My sense is he felt a little bit like probably anybody who's played this game at a high level or not. When it gets a little chippy and a little physical and you start to feel the adrenaline, he probably was over there, man, this is the kind of game that I wish I still played for. And I thought you saw that intensity in him, which was great. You know, I agree with you. I think, Dickinson tried to get in, you know, get physical with Armando. And then, I thought he was whatever he was trying to do to Caleb there when Caleb was on the ground. And, everybody stood their ground. And I thought it lit a fire in us because we really played great from that point on. And look, Armando is the best player on the floor. He imposed his will, and there's not many people bigger or more physical than Hunter, and he had his way with him. I mean, he's clearly the better player statistically. He's clearly the better player just watching. and continues to seem to feel really healthy. And when he's healthy, he finishes a lot better. And he missed a couple that he shouldn't miss. He could have had well over 30. But he was terrific. And you know, some timely scoring from our guards. Still a couple turnovers that really, like especially Caleb, that really make me wonder what goes through his head at times. But I think he just he loses his ability to stay under control in moments. And then he has other moments where he, like that, when he came off the pick and threw that beautiful bounce pass to Armando for the dunk, where he's so solid and obviously so athletic. And, man, he is something. I don't think it's going to change, though. He's a junior now, so I think we have what we have.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
He makes some of the passes. He tried that whip around one-handed pass earlier in the game. It didn't work, but then when he did it, the Baycott mm-hmm. there. I mean, fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about Armando, and you talk about his health, and I agree. He looked early in the early season. He looked a little sluggish, maybe a little heavy, maybe a little out of shape, but he's gotten his bounce back. And he was 11 of 15 tonight, and I swear he missed five or six bunnies. And he still shot mm-hmm. 11 for 15 for 26 points. Only five rebounds, which is surprising. No offensive rebounds, but Michigan – credit Juwan Howard and his staff. They were not going to let Carolina kill him on the offensive glass, and they didn't. Only eight for Carolina. But how have you seen him progress? And I'm talking about Armando, progress into a guy that everybody talked about. You got to shoot threes to be in the league and all that. And he tried it a few times, but he's really embraced, and especially in the last couple games, there's been a shift of getting down on the box, getting low on the box. But even tonight, he was able to take the ball from the top of the key or from the wing and make moves that look so much freer than he has been able to do all year because you're right, he's healthy.
Yeah, I think his body feels good. Certainly, at least his lower extremities, his feet, his ankles, his knees clearly feel good. I don't know where his shoulder is, but he's moving very well, which is, you know, that pertains to your legs. And he seems fit. He seems quick. And similar to what we talked about in the Ohio State game, I just think he has decided that I'm going to play harder than anybody else. My effort level is just going to be better. And it's the way he runs the floor. It's the way he establishes position, as you're talking about, and gets low and presents himself with a big target. And there's some coaching in there. And let me explain what I mean by that. It's a very clear shift the last, I guess, four games that we have to get the ball into Armando, right? That's been coached. They practiced it. You can see it. They're all looking for him more. Even Pete, his mate in the front court, is looking to get the ball into him. Okay. So that was the coaching to the team and to the perimeter players. And then you'd sure think that they pulled Armando aside and said, "Mondo, we're going to force the ball into you. Our offense is much more smooth and the ball movement is better and we get more assists when you touch the ball. However, you have to do your part," which means running rim to rim, which means establishing physical low post presence early in possessions. And when you get the ball around the rim, you got to finish, because then you occupy eyes and double teams and it leads to way more open shots for our perimeter guys. And so I think he's healthy. I think there's some coaching in there. And then for him, from a mental perspective, I just, like I said in Ohio State, I think he just says to himself, "I'm going to play harder than everybody else. I'm going to play harder than the bigs that I'm playing against. I'm going to run harder, and I'm going to be relentless." And he was relentless tonight.
Yeah, I remember last year, and I mentioned it a lot. I think it was against Virginia Tech up there. He slung a Luma down, and he had gotten sick of getting beat on. And you know, you got to play through the fouls and all that stuff. And he still throws his hands up a little bit. But at that point last year, when he did that, he was like, "I'm done." And he started playing really well. I almost said a word I can't say on the podcast. He's done the same thing earlier this year. You know, it has happened now. Just fantastic again. And I tell you what, Hunter Dickinson can play. And he can't do a thing against
big and strong.
And Baycott just absolutely owns him out there. It is fascinating to watch that matchup and how it's a dominant thing. And credit Baycott. You know, he got fired up. He didn't get out of his game. Still not sure how he got a technical in that scrum.
I just think from shoving the guard, that's my best guess for that. And, you know, but I agree. I think Caleb probably deserved it. And Dickinson probably deserved it. I'm not sure the Michigan guard deserved it. I'm not sure Mondo deserved it, but yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
It played a part though, because when he got in foul trouble and he was out from the 6 minute mark to 3 minute mark, they made that run. They cut it from either 7 or 9 down to 2 after Baker hit that 3. So it was, I was thinking to myself, man, if this somehow doesn't go our way, Tommy and I are going to be talking about the fact that when Baycott got his 4th, he sat down for 3.5 minutes, mm-hmm. and it would have only been his 3rd had he not got the technical.
Yeah, and it hurt Michigan when Dickinson had to sit down in the first half. I mean, you got to keep those guys on the floor. You know, I understand offsetting technicals, all that kind of mess. I just don't like it when it adds a personal foul and it can change the game. Yeah, I mean, it's just a silly rule. But I tell you, there's two things that I don't like as a human being and as a man, really. You don't want to get hit in the face, and you don't want somebody to step over you. And Dickinson did it twice. He did it to Baycott, and then he tried to step over Caleb. So somebody in the chat said they poked the bear, and I think that's an apt description here. Let's talk about Caleb Love a little bit, and I'm going to get to a question on the message board. And we got a bunch of questions, and I will go until I pass out, fellas, because it's been a long day.
Man had a long day, guys. He got up at 4 a.m. for signing day, and I texted you at some point when we were confirming, and you were already at it for a number of hours. So kudos, Tom. You're doing double duty today.
So we recorded a 3.5 hour signing day show live, and then we did another podcast after that, and then I went and covered Mac Brown, and then raced home and wrote all about it. So shout out to the whole Inside Carolina team. It's been fantastic, the work that people have done, and everybody in the chat knows that, and we appreciate the support. Question from Hubert's Dudes on the message board: would love to hear Dewey's comment on Caleb's growth as a playmaker. And we've talked about the mind-blowing turnovers he has. But he has 6 and 7 assists in the last few games. He had only 4 tonight and 5 turnovers. So not the best game to talk about the playmaking ability after the Michigan game. But just sort of – Hubert's gotten to him a little bit. Don't shoot 100 times. Distribute the basketball. What growth have you seen from him? And I know as a fellow guard, it's hard to watch sometimes, but he's gotten better.
Yes, and look, when Caleb is really good, right? Good Caleb is a knockdown shooter, can make tough shots off the bounce, can finish at the rim like he did a couple times tonight. He's explosive. He's athletic. I mean, how about that dunk? I mean, he's a freak. There's a freak in there. And good Caleb is also a very solid playmaker. He's gotten better off the pick and roll. He's gotten better out of our horn set that we run, getting into the paint, making good decisions, making good bounce passes. But then when he loses that feel or that focus, then he has those sloppy turnovers. It's like watching a freshman. But let me make that very relevant. Seth Trimble, a couple times tonight, over-dribbled a little bit, got himself in no man's land, ultimately turned the ball over sloppily. He's a freshman. I expect him to do that. He will learn. He will grow out of that. But then Caleb does the same thing. He dribbles into no man's land and just either loses the ball, gets stripped, or tries to chuck a pass cross court through a bunch of big guys and turns the ball over. And just you just don't expect to see that out of a junior. So when Caleb is good, he's really, really good. He's All-American level good. But he still has these moments that are just remain puzzling to me. If he can continue to minimize those, man, you've got one hell of a player. And he didn't make a ton of outside shots tonight, or maybe just the one. But he got to the rim, and after missing a couple of free throws, he made free throws late. He had the steal and the dunk. He had some good assists, the pass to Mondo. And he'll guard you, too. I mean, he's a pretty good defender as well. So I don't know what else to say other than, you know, good Caleb is great, and bad Caleb is a head-scratcher.
Yeah, and it is – it often happens within seconds of each other. And
exactly.
One day it will click.
He's like a corner. He's like a corner in football. I think he has no memory. Yeah, right? He gets burned for a touchdown. He's ready. He's up in press coverage, ready to go, you know, ready to jam the receiver on the next possession. He has an interception and a pick six. Like, that's Caleb.
Yeah, absolutely. And he can forget what he did good just as fast as he can forget what he did bad, it looks like. But, yeah, I mean, certainly a dynamic player. But this is the guy, and I don't like how I'm going through player by player, but I think it's relevant tonight, especially with the questions. RJ Davis makes this team go. I mean, I'd like somebody to tell me why RJ Davis is not the most important player on the team, besides Baycott, obviously. Can you tell me why I would be wrong thinking RJ is the straw that stirs this drink?
No, I mean, look, you're leading the witness a little bit here, right? I mean, to take you back to your old days. But you and I in the preseason pod, the last two seasons, this one and last, you asked me who's the most important player, and I said RJ Davis. With the ball in his hands as much as it is and the decision-making relying so heavily on what he decides to do and where he gets the ball to people to be successful, he is unquestionably your most important player in a different way than Armando. We need Armando on the glass. We need Armando for his presence and his effort and his toughness. But RJ makes us have rhythm. When he's good, he's terrific. And we talked about this after the losing streak. They came back after that week of practice, and there was a decided difference in RJ's pace. You know, getting the ball off misses and pushing the ball to get into the defense earlier in those secondary break situations. Even though we're not running this, the typical secondary break stuff that we ran under Coach Williams, his effort of speeding up the game has the defense on its heels just a little bit more, and it allows them to do something that Coach was really fond of saying, was give them a chance to make a mistake. Well, when you get them on their heels earlier and they're scrambling a little bit, and then maybe if they're not communicating well, they're a step slow getting around that first screen in this, in your set, or that first dribble handoff. And pace has a lot to do with that. And he has definitively been different in terms of his pace. And I think it's paid huge dividends. He obviously is a gifted scorer. He's good off the bounce around the 3-point line. He's got the floater, huge floater. He hit his last basket of the night off the glass, over the big. I mean, that was a very high degree of difficulty with that shot. I know he shot 6 for 15, but man, every one of his shots felt like a big shot. And he rebounds great for his size. He's tough. Look, he's not as explosive as some of the other guards his size. He's not as explosive as even Joel Berry was. Certainly not as explosive as Ty. But man, is he crafty. He finds a way to put the ball in the basket. He's probably the most gifted scorer of all the guys I just mentioned. Even probably more gifted natural scorer than Marcus Page was. And it's evidenced by his high school career, right? But man, you feel good when he has the ball in his hands. He still makes careless turnovers, not as much as Caleb. He still does it. But when they're both good, we've talked about it, there's no better backcourt in the country.
Yeah, I love the way he rebounds the basketball. And he had 6 tonight, and he probably could have had 7 or 8 or even 9, close to 10, if a big hadn't grabbed it before he got his hands on it. I mean, he just – he is the guy that gets in the middle, and he's the smallest guy on the court most of the time. He still does it. Carolina 80-76. Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com sponsors this podcast. I got to get that in before I forget. We must talk about Leaky Black. He hit a big shot early. He, got a nice follow.
Hit a big shot late.
and got the rebounds. Sometimes I'm thinking, what is Leaky thinking out there? What's going through his head when I watch him play? And then he just turns up 9 and 10 in a big game. And they needed every one of them against Michigan. Mm-hmm. Just speak to him how he continues to grow. He's 5 years in, but he continues to just do what he does.
Played like a fifth-year senior, right? Solid defensively, block shot, smart play to throw the ball off the kid.
Oh, yes. I didn't mention those.
Yeah, great play. Get switched on to Dickinson instead of trying to fight him in the post. He kind of olays him, which is a smart thing to do when you're giving up size and weight like he was. Comes around, makes a steal, and then makes an incredibly difficult little touch floater pass over Hunter, over to I think it was to RJ to cement the turnover. Hit a 3 early. Hit a gigantic little floater in the lane there late. His last basket had a good – they were running a little 3-quarter court press. We broke the press. The ball swung back to him. He ripped through, went right to the rim and finished. Look, we all, I think, probably agree to live without the mid-range jumpers. You know, it doesn't feel like he's made hardly any of them. And I wish he wouldn't take them, to be very straight about it. But the catch and shoot threes, his percentage is up. I love him around the rim. He had the tip dunk. He did so many things tonight to contribute to that win, in addition to guarding their best player, who's good. I mean, that, as you heard Billis say, probably an NBA player. So he's had to deal with that 2 games in a row, Sensabaugh first and then Jet the young kid. So he just does so many things for you. You don't have to call anything for him. He plays like a fifth-year senior that is your glue guy, and that's how I think about him.
Yeah, I mean, the play where he blocked, ran down to block the guy in the air, caught it, threw it off of him, and then the play on Dickinson. Those are probably two, you know, they win the game for you, those type plays.
Huge turnovers, yeah.
Yeah, and so Leaky does Leaky things. A lot of questions about Pete Nance, and I tweeted that he needed to get involved tonight. He was a little step slow early, but he made a play later. How does Carolina maximize what Pete Nance brings? I don't think they're doing it yet, but I also think that Pete Nance, quite frankly, disappears at times. So how do you blend that in to make this team better consistently?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I don't know that I have the answer, because I think they're still figuring out how to play together. He wasn't effective scoring the ball tonight, and he missed a couple threes that, had he made them, would have been huge momentum shifting shots. But he did have the big and one, which was a beautiful play. I thought he rebounded the ball well overall, was solid as a part of our core defense. He just didn't score the ball or really have that many opportunities. He had the early post up in the first half where he tried his fadeaway over his right shoulder and it got blocked. You know, I think the question for me is going to be against the top tier teams that have, you know, big time size and athleticism, which Michigan does. I think that presents a challenge for him because he's a below the rim player. He's not explosive, and he really scores, at least what he's shown us this year. When he has good scoring games, it's kind of a crafty scoring, you know, jump hooks and turnaround jumpers. And, you know, and then he obviously has had games where he's hit some threes. The ball just didn't find him that much tonight, in my opinion. And so I don't know if that means we need to call more sets for him. I'm not necessarily sure that that's the answer, because I think he really is our fourth option from a scoring perspective. So, you know, it's an interesting thing. It's nice to know that he's capable of putting up 25, you know, and obviously averaged what he averaged last year. But I don't think the key is that we always need him to score. We don't always need him to score. I think we need him to always be a presence, to make sure the offense is running and that he's helpful on the glass. But when other guys are having bad nights and we do get him more looks, yeah, then we expect him to score. But I don't know if you agree, but I he's our fourth option. So it doesn't throw me that much. It's just people are so in love with what Brady did, so they instantly say that Nance has to do what Brady did. And it's just not going to be that. And they're different guys.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. Folks need to shelve that comparison. You know, that needs to be a New Year's resolution. We're not going to say Pete Nance and Brady Manek in the same voice. Somebody asked on the chat about the need for the fourth option behind Davis, Love, and Baycott. And it's got to be Nance. I agree with you there. When you've got those three putting up, you know, 18, 19, 20 plus a night, and they're doing that consistently, then he doesn't need it. He just needs to go get some rebounds, hit a timely shot. The play he had where he had the and one left-handed, I mean, it's like, where did that come from? I mean, he is
the most athletic play we've seen him make.
Right? And I think that is what people see and say, do it every time or do it all the time. And he's one of those guys that he wows you. I think he's going to be very, very important moving forward for North Carolina. He brings that experience. We talk about Leakey's fifth year. It's his fifth year. He's played against those Michigan guys, you know, repeatedly and all. And so he brings that thing. Somebody says, does it need to be Tyler Nickel to be that fourth guy? No, it needs to be Pete Nance with the rest of the guys. Spot minutes. Hubert's going to rely on his starters the most, and then he's going to play the matchups, I think, more so than maybe has been done in the past. Let me ask you a question, though. Speaking of the bench and all, this is a good question. This is from CW Hill, 2357 on the Tar Pit, or excuse me, UNC Basketball message board. Is the starting lineup Carolina's best lineup, in your opinion? I guess the only other option would be Puff for Nance, or some people were talking about Caleb needs to be a bench guy. I mean, he can't do that.
Oh, God. Get out of here with that. I think it is. It is, but, you know, the stretches when Trimble comes in and elevates our ball pressure and gives us a different look from the perimeter. He's obviously a lot smaller than Leakey, but more explosive. He doesn't give you a lot offensively, but he has shown a knack for, you know, a nice little pocket pass on a pick and roll. But defensively, he was awesome tonight. I mean, he's going to hound you. And that's a difference when he comes in the game. Puff gives you something different. Obviously, he creates chaos. We've talked about that. Hit a big three in the first half, which was a nice catch and shoot. And so do I think our starting five is the best five and who you're going to see us close games with? I do. Unless you're playing against a team that's really small and really perimeter oriented, you know, then you can see Puff being in there for Nance, or Trimble being in there and Leakey sliding to the four. But the thing is the offense runs differently without Pete, right? Cause we run so much of that two high bigs, and so many actions out of that with back screens and down screens and getting Caleb off dribble handoffs and pick and roll action. And you know, amongst the guys that can play the four, Leakey, Puff, and Pete, if you're running a pick and roll action away from them with Mondo and Mondo rolls and your other big pops to the top of the key for a potential catch and shoot three, we would pick Pete to shoot that shot amongst those three. And so long-winded. And so I think the rotation of that top seven is clear. Tyler Nickel, I think, will certainly get to play in certain situations if we're struggling to score or we need to look from the perimeter. It's going to be those five.
Yep, absolutely. Double gambler. And I appreciate you doing this, Dewey. It's always fun to hear.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people ask a lot of questions. What better way to get a good answer than from a former guy that's been around? And shout out to the 400 people in here, 390 people in here at 10:30 awesome. On the East Coast. While you're at it, folks, make sure you subscribe to this YouTube channel and also like this video. Like them all. And for Dewey from Double Gambler, can Dewey talk about how Roy's offense facilitated playing two big men? And does that make sense given we have both Pete and Mondo? Should Hubert run some Roy sets? I like Pete, but not sure if him playing as a stretch four gets the best out of his skill set. Similar discussion that we just had, but with that caveat.
And I don't think he's totally playing a stretch four. I mean, I think he's playing
he's more of a hybrid.
A little more
right?
perimeter. Yeah, more hybrid. He's a little more, he's not Brady from a perimeter oriented big perspective. He's not Mondo banging on the block every possession. He's a little bit of a hybrid. And so the question was, should we run some of Coach Williams' stuff? So the secondary break stuff that we ran and all the options off of it had a lot of high-low rotations amongst the bigs. You have to practice that. I mean, we would put that stuff in first week of practice and then build on it and build options and counters once we got scouted and had video out. And so you're not going to be able to go and install all this secondary stuff that was built for the traditional two bigs. Hubert runs some versions of coach's box stuff. He just doesn't do it below the foul line. They kind of they bump it up past foul line extended and kind of angle it so that they're creating more more excuse me.
Sorry. It's got you now. More driving lanes and more space there. Hey, I've been there.
Of course, half of them were alive. And so I think that would be tough to do from the secondary perspective. Some of the box stuff we do run. And I'm struggling, Tommy. You got to go. Sorry.
I'll mute you. Cough it out. So looking at the box score, folks, why do we get some order? I have been there with those coughs, and I did it earlier today. I'll just mask it a little more. Seth Trimble, 1 point on 2,018 minutes of action. Puff Johnson, 21 minutes of action. To what Dewey was talking about in the lineup-wise, I think the five of Nance, Baycott, Davis, Love, and Black are set, period. I think the difference is – you good? I think the difference is Puff Johnson and Seth Trimble offer those alternatives that Dewey was talking about there. But as far as the anything close to the Iron Five is going to be those guys. All right, I've unmuted you. You're back in here talking about the box set sort of bumped up above the foul line.
Yeah, so they run more of that action above the foul line extended. He loves to to pull both bigs up to those high post, even above high post areas. Enter the ball, run dribble handoffs off of there. And so all of that stuff is more Hubert's system, and it's different than Coach Williams. And so, you know, some of the individualized plays that we've run for Pete to get him a look in the mid post, I would imagine we'll continue to see. I think we know what the staff thinks of him, evidenced by the last play in regulation against Ohio State. Right. I mean, say no more. They obviously think very highly of his ability. And that's the kind of crafty shot that I was referring to earlier, where he made that catch. And
I'm back. My AirPods died. I had a cough attack. Like, I've been working since 4 a.m.
Come on, man. It's just 8 o'clock out there. This is 8:30. It's just getting started.
What I was saying was, you know how staff feels about Pete because they called that set for him. That in and of itself was to me almost a typical Pete Nance shot, right? He caught it and turned over his left shoulder and hit a fadeaway. Those are the kind of shots he's capable of hitting. I just don't think the ball found him tonight. Simple as that. And so do I think we could see more of the type of offense that Coach Williams ran? I don't. And that's just because I understand the intricacy of the secondary break. And if you haven't been practicing it, you know, for us back in my day since October, but these guys start practice in August, if you haven't been practicing it, it's not like you just all of a sudden say, hey, let's run some secondary break stuff. It just doesn't work that way. So will they introduce wrinkles and try to find other ways to have PP successful? I would think so. But again, he's our fourth scorer. And so we want a lot out of him. We were excited with the transfer news that he was coming. But he's our fourth scorer. And so I think he'll have some good games for sure. And we will rely on him. And he's a smart player. But yeah, I don't think we're going to change much of how we play.
Yeah. And that looking at the YouTube chat, and I starred several questions, a lot of them. Gregory Hall is in here. Gregory
G. Hall.
He is, it's earlier for him than it is for you. He's out there on the West Coast. So he's, stay up late with us, Gregory. Appreciate you joining. He asked about Pete Nance. Another question, Jake UNC asked about Pete Nance. So we've covered that. Prez guy asked, Dewey, is there anything different on offense that's happened these last four games, or is it just the guys moving the ball and gelling more? Have you seen anything structurally different in this little winning streak that you saw maybe when they were struggling?
Yeah, I think we covered it, but I'm happy to highlight it again. I think it's two things. I think it's Armando's commitment to running rim to rim and getting deep physical post position, and I think it's RJ's pace. When we play with pace and we have a big that's running, everything opens up. It just changes how our offense flows. When we were struggling early in the season and struggled against Iowa State and struggled at Indiana. We didn't struggle to score against against Alabama. We just couldn't stop them. You know, we lost a crazy game. Okay. But against Iowa State and against Indiana, we struggled to score. And we talked after at least one of those games. I think it was the Indiana game. Mm-hmm. God, everything is so hard. Every possession is like a grinded out. Can we find a good look? Or do we end up with Caleb taking an off-balance three off the bounce over a hand? And those types of possessions have been much fewer and far between the last four games. And so to answer the poster's question, I truly believe it is very seriously those two things, Armando's commitment and RJ's commitment. And because of that, the floor is more open. The ball moves better. The ball goes inside and then comes back out. The ball goes inside and we score. The ball goes inside and we get fouls. It's just been a different flow. But to me, the catalyst has been Armando's effort and RJ pushing the pace.
Yeah, and Armando getting to the rim and getting set early, it certainly made a difference. A couple more questions here before we get out of here. 10:30 on the East Coast, 400 people still in here. A couple questions. I'm going to blend them together. Preston from Greensboro, who was in the chat earlier today, and George Jenkins, I believe, was too. Blend the question. Can you talk about this? What they play again on the 30th, so they've got 9 days. Of course, a day of that or two will be Christmas. How does – and Hubert may be different, but I doubt it. How is Christmas handled for the guys when you have this break? And then how much benefit is being able to have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 days of practice between games at this point in the season?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a nice mental break for the guys to get home and get a couple days of rest. I'm sure that he'll encourage them to get in their high school gym at least once or twice. But I'm sure a lot of them probably tried to go home tonight or first thing tomorrow morning. And so you have a couple days to relax and decompress. I imagine they'll be back on the 26th. That's what we always did, as everybody flew back on the 26th and you had practice that night. So that probably is the same. Maybe they get an extra day because they don't play till the 31st.
I think they play the 30th. Yeah, they play Pittsburgh 30th. The 30th. My bad. Okay.
So
Friday night, actually.
Okay. Yeah. But so they're not going to have 6, 7, 8 practices. You know, they are probably going to have 26, 27, 28, 20, either 3 or 4. So they're going to get some time off now. And the mental break, I think, is useful. The physical part of it, just getting your legs and feeling healthy. Then you get back and have a couple good practices and be ready to go. I feel like when I played, we might sometimes had games like on the 27th or the 28th. And so you were right back in it. And so they have a little bit of a break, which is probably warranted given the schedule that we had early and the travel and everything. So this is a nice break. And man, we feel a lot better than we did a couple weeks ago, coming off of 2 wins against, you know, what would seem to be definite tournament teams, Michigan and Ohio State, if they stay healthy. And obviously getting an ACC win too. So we feel a lot better. You know, that Ohio State game felt like we had to have it. Tonight didn't feel like we had to have it, but it felt like we earned it. And like we talked at the top, it was a fun game to watch and entertaining. And I thought our kids rose to the challenge and played hard, made timely shots. It was it's a nice feeling to go into Christmas playing the way we've played the last couple of nights.
Indeed, from 5-4 to 9-4 heading into Christmas break with Pittsburgh coming up on the 30th, so Friday night. A chance to get to 10-4 going into the new year. I think they got Wake Forest on the 4th, and Wake Forest beat Duke, which was an interesting game. I posted about it. I didn't recognize any of those players. I mean, the ACC's changed so much. Somebody asked, are there any other ACC teams that are going to play as physical as Michigan and Ohio State did? And I have no idea, because I don't know who's on the rosters anymore, barely. You know, So until you sit down and watch them. But Dewey Burke, you're the man for joining us. I know it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I know you enjoy answering the posters and the readers and the watchers' questions. And shout out to the 412 out of here. Dewey, Merry Christmas, my friend, to your family.
Merry Christmas. Likewise. Thank you. Sorry about my my coughing attack, then my headphones died. It's like this is my first rodeo. We've only been doing this for like 7 years.
live TV, man.
Yeah.
Who knows what will happen.
Yeah. So, no, Merry Christmas. We appreciate everybody listening, and I really do enjoy this. And I'll give you something, Tommy. This is pretty cool. Obviously, doing this has given me a chance to stay close to the program and have some involvement. And stay relevant, I guess you could say. But it is truly amazing wherever I go, just about, whether it's at a Carolina game or on campus or even in New York City or LA or wherever, invariably I run into somebody that comes up and says, hey, I love your podcast. So that's a huge compliment to both of us that there really are an unbelievable amount of people that listen. So do appreciate that. Very, very much. And then last thing, I have a great story for you. It's a short story, but it's a great story. So my wife's cousin, who we are very, very close with, he's a freshman lacrosse player at Villanova. He's a stud. He was an All-American in high school, and he's a freshman. And he just tore his ACL. Very unfortunate. The Memphis Grizzlies were in Denver the last couple of days. And so I had a chance to see Danny and we had lunch yesterday before the game, Grizzlies Nuggets. And I just happened to tell him, you know, yeah, it's a bummer, my cousin, da-da-da, told him about it. Unprovoked, Danny sent me a video today for my cousin, just talking to him about staying positive, staying up, keeping his head, that he's been there, he's going through it right now. And the first month is going to be really challenging and you get your surgery, but attack your rehab, be a beast about it, get your sleep. Just the quality of that guy and what the Carolina family does sometimes. I mean, it, man, like brought a tear to my wife's eye. And so sent it over to him. And I just said, hey, you're in good company, to my cousin Colin and or my wife's cousin Colin. And that's pretty cool. That's yeah. pretty cool. So I thought you'd appreciate that. I thought the people on the message board would appreciate that. That's the kind of guy that we have inside this family.
Yeah, Carolina family is real, folks. Dewey Burke's one of them. Last thing before I get out of here, I asked people on our chat this morning, Dewey, post in chat where you're from. And a guy posts, and he's in north of Milan, Italy. I'm like, no, that's, you know, that's crazy. No, you're not. You know, prove it or whatever. He said, I'm on a military base. I serve over here. Wow. And how cool is that? That a guy serving in the military on the other side of the world is paying attention to Inside Carolina's podcast and us and all that stuff. So all credit to you on this one. All credit to everybody else on the other one. I just host them and just drive. It's always fun, man. You've been great. Again, have a Merry Christmas. We'll talk soon. Got plenty more basketball games to go.
Merry Christmas.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.